when you open the door for somebody else.
Hey, everybody. It's the Vaccine Conversation. Why are you copying me?
What? Why are you doing the intro? I said I was going to do the intro.
You did that on purpose. You pointed right at me. And you, okay, that was interesting.
Ding, ding,
that was fun.
Thanks.
Right. Well,
that's what I do. See, this is what happens when this takes time, guys, and we get kind of, you know, I got to just shake it up a little bit.
You were very bored with the last episode. I could see you fading.
Really,
you're like,
was
oh
bored.
My gosh.
Whenever I like lean back in the chair and just kind of like hands behind the head, like, yep, yeah, then that's when you know. Well, the pediatrician.
You know how I have that like impatient face? You have that
lackadaisical
face.
I know. Anyway. Okay, so welcome to the Vaccine Conversation with Melissa and Dr. Bob. This is what I do to keep life interesting, because you know what? Life sucks sometimes. Like, bottom line, stuff gets hard. I almost said a bad word. Stuff gets hard sometimes. Mm-hmm. Ladies and gentlemen, that is the reality of life. And so, are you checking to make sure it's red?
Yeah,
okay. And so, why do you always look over at the monitor like constantly?
I'm seeing your level. I'm seeing if your level's like the same as my level.
I get nervous. So, I'm like, what's happening? But look, life gets hard. So, you know what? I've always found being silly is like the best way to combat that. You know, because stuff gets hard and parenthood is hard and so many things are hard, and this debate about informed consent and losing your rights and losing your freedom of speech, all that stuff is hard. So I have to be like a goofball just to like make my life go by better. I'm like that with my kids. I'm serious when I need to be, but I also like being really silly because otherwise I get bored. And I know if I'm getting bored, other people are getting bored. So I kind of am a little off the wall sometimes, but...
And we appreciate it.
Well, listen, this is another reason why I never got involved in substances, okay? Because I'm already like this, completely substance-free. And any of you that don't know, I don't drink, don't smoke, I've never
what
done
do
anything.
What do you do?
Food is my vice, I'd say.
Oh, come
and
on,
even,
that's a song. Don't
what
drink,
do you
don't
do?
Smoke.
Oh.
What do you do?
Don't. I don't.
Okay. All right.
Older than my time.
Sorry.
But no, I mean, it's just, substances are not my thing, which, you know, in some ways makes it harder because you have to really feel everything that you feel in life. You don't get the opportunity to check out.
Yeah.
And there are times, especially since motherhood, that I get why people drink. I get why it happens.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, and that's, it's funny that you always see these things on Facebook about mommy juice and, you know, like almost normalizing the drinking to deal with the stress of motherhood. It's kind of like this new phenomenon that's become acceptable that we see. And we know that, you know, there are detrimental effects to this overuse of alcohol that we'll see as well. And then I think it just adds to the roller coaster of the emotions of things being hard. I feel calm right now, but now this wears off and things are still hard. And now I need, you know, like it's essentially the problems don't go away.
Yeah, you.
They're still there.
Yeah, you. So you don't drink, you sing to cope
sing.
With
and I have to answer this officially because I actually see this question a lot. Yes, I do sing the first song, the intro song on our podcast. That is me.
Yeah, the intro and the outro.
Well, it's the same song.
Yeah, it's the same song.
It's the same song. It's called Be the Peace, which I wrote. And
you're all the voices.
Voices.
Yeah.
Yes, I love backgrounds and layers. That's me. So I meant to mention this a long time ago because people keep asking, wait, are you on the intro song? Or people put it on our iTunes reviews, but I can't respond to them with the answer. So that's my official answer. Yes, that was me. A singer, my previous life before mom life, a life I'm resurrecting, by the way, because I just told you I was in the studio yesterday recording again, working on this EP project, and I'm really excited about it. And anyway, that was just a little bit about me.
Yeah, so no new, is there any, there's no news today, right? We're just getting straight to our topic?
We're almost going to get straight to our topic. I just want to read one thing.
Okay.
So the Connecticut hearing where Robert Kennedy Jr. was there to debate doctors from Yale, and they did not show up. And at 3 a.m, they sent an email canceling of the day of the debate.
Wow, okay.
So Robert Kennedy Jr. had already flown out there, was there, whatever. He stayed, had a PowerPoint presentation, spoke to the press, answered questions. And before he started, there's a senator there. This is in Connecticut. Candelore, I think that's his name, is a senator. His intro statement I thought was interesting. He said, you know, the press is asking questions. Are you suggesting, Senator Candler, that your constituents don't vaccinate? You know, they make it black or white, right? If you want to stand up for informed choice, you must believe that the vaccine program should be dead and everybody's, you know. So this is what he says. This is his exact quote. He says, I would suggest that we allow for continuing exemptions in place and people have a right to choose. I am not a medical doctor. And that, and he was referring to, I don't tell my constituents what to do.
Right.
I am not a medical doctor. I chose to vaccinate my children. We chose not to give our children the HPV vaccine. And those were our decisions to make. And I think everyone has that right to make a decision. In particular with the HPV vaccines, we do have a bill in committee, this is in Connecticut, that is going to be mandating that vaccine for anybody in ninth grade. And the fact of the matter is that the contraction of the HPV virus, part of it is behavioral, but it's not a communicable disease that poses a public health threat. And so to suggest that we are going to embark on mandating vaccines that don't pose public health threats is so far outside the scope of what we should be doing here. And I think we need to put the brakes on that. And I'm particularly alarmed that we are going to be doing this, potentially eliminating religious exemptions without so much as a public hearing. That's unprecedented. Mm. And I really loved what he said there.
Who is that again?
This is Senator Candelora. I think this is how you say his name. This is in Connecticut. And, you know, this idea of vaccine choice is not for only unvaccinated and vaccinated. This is for almost everyone, because almost everyone is utilizing choice on some level, whether for themselves or for their children. So the opting out of the flu vaccine that year, you're not going to be able to do that when that becomes mandated for your child to go to school. You think HPV is a risk and you've talked that over with your wife and you want to opt out of that one. Guess what? That's not going to be an option. You personally don't believe in the flu vaccine, but you believe in everything else. That's not going to be, you're not going to have those freedoms to choose anymore. So I think everybody thinks of this as you either believe in vaccines or you don't, but it's really not that issue. This is an issue of being able to have the option to opt out. And he highlights a perfect example of when you might want to opt out of something and exercise your choice. We know that Senator Foley, that we talked about on a previous episode from Maine, who gave his story, said they used the philosophical exemption to delay vaccines and opt out of DTP after the death of their child.
Right, right.
So without those philosophical exemptions, they wouldn't have allowed their other children wouldn't have been able to go to school.
Right. So yeah, after his one child died from the DTP vaccine, they still did other vaccines for their other kids.
Right.
And
on a slower schedule.
Yeah, and so I feel like that's why I think your main point is everybody should be against any vaccine mandates, because almost everybody's going to exercise some sort of choice and want some sort of freedom, even if it's involving one dose of one vaccine. Everybody wants that choice.
So, yeah, that was just one little blurb in the news. But what I wrote to you about last week, I said, oh my gosh, check out this podcast. Joe Rogan. Now, a lot of people like Joe Rogan. He has a variety of topics on. I'm not a huge podcast listener. I know my husband likes him. And he puts out a lot of content. So there's always somebody that he's interviewing from a variety of, you know, career lines. And so he has Dr. Peter Hotez, as I say his last name, on a podcast. And that kind of created a little bit of a stir because obviously Peter Hotez is so very, he's what they used to call in the Leicester time in the 1800s when they had the anti-vaccination leagues, but it was anti-compulsory vaccination leagues.
Right.
And this is all about one vaccine, by the way. They literally created leagues against compulsory vaccinations for just the smallpox vaccine.
Okay.
Could you imagine what they would think of what's going on now, what's being mandated now? That was just for one vaccine.
Yeah.
So in Leicester in England, this was a big group of people that retaliated, and then they used the Leicester method to quarantine smallpox cases, and they had way higher success of decreasing smallpox mortality and cases than those who fully vaccinated in their cities and towns.
Right.
And people ended up copying this method. Like, but what they call the people who are very, very strong, they call them ardent pro-vaccinationists.
Okay. That's what they called them back then.
For somebody who's, it'd be like somebody who's very pro-mandate. Because the idea of pro-vaccine doesn't make much sense. A lot of people believe in vaccines, but don't believe in the vaccine schedule as it is now. Or they believe in vaccines, they may do the schedule, but they believe other people have the right
to opt out. What was it again? Ardent?
Ardent pro-vaccinationists. Okay. So I'm going to start using that term. And again, their movement was anti-compulsory vaccination league.
Right.
Not anti-vaccination league. Anti-compulsory vaccination
league. So where does Peter Hotez come in?
He is an ardent pro-vaccinationist. Oh, okay, right, that was my point. Is I didn't want to throw that term out and you not understand where I got that from. Yeah. I got that from the late 1800s in Leicester, England. Okay. Like, I'm a cultured, worldly person, okay?
You're very well read.
Thank you.
Well, can I explain who Peter Hotez is, just like his credentials?
I don't really want to hear it, but I mean, I already know, but yes.
He is an infectious disease medical doctor from Baylor University in Texas. And he has spent many years basically working on tropical diseases, parasitic diseases, and he's actually trying to he's been working on for many years trying to make a vaccine to prevent I forget which disease it is, but one of the like tropical parasitic diseases. He's working on that vaccine for many years now, and he and his wife have a daughter with autism. And so he wrote a book called Vaccines Did Not Cause Rachel's Autism. And that's basically how he's become popular. I mean, I think before that book, he's quoted often
in the media.
Now he is. Yeah, now. But he didn't used to be. I don't think he used to be.
Because he works with Paul. I mean, him and Paul Offit are like frequently mentioned together, I noticed.
I don't remember him being mentioned. Maybe I just wasn't looking for it. But so he's very well credentialed. I mean, he has a lot of experience, a lot of education on primarily on pediatric parasitic infectious diseases, but he is an infectious disease specialist in general.
He calls himself a vaccine scientist.
Right. I guess you can definitely disagree with his politics and his vaccination politics, and maybe even disagree with his autism politics. But I think I have always a little place in my heart for families who are raising a child with autism that their life is not easy. It's not easy to raise a child with autism, and even though Dr. Hotez is really going against what a lot of us believe regarding autism.
But it's not even just that. He's very, very, he's always the one predicting the next epidemic that is going, he always talks about that. Like, I think he was talking about the Zika virus like a year or so ago, 2 years ago. He's always predicting this big outbreak is going to happen. Okay. He, in fact, listening to one of our old episodes on measles in Europe, I quoted him in an article then.
Oh, okay.
Because they had interviewed him for this article about the 40,000 Europe cases that were happening and how he said it could happen. You know, it says, doctors warn, the United States is next. Okay. Well, guess what? And in that episode, I said to you, I guarantee you this is going to lead to a measles outbreak here and a bunch of legislation. That was back in November before any of this happened.
Yeah.
That was one of episode 6, I believe, or 5. And, and it's exactly what happened. It was what I said.
Right. But so he was on Joe Rogan's podcast, basically talking about his work and his work with vaccines, but also what he believes about vaccines, vaccines and autism and vaccine and anti-vaxxers, so to speak. So we thought we would, I guess, fact check the podcast.
Yeah, there was just a lot of stuff.
I mean,
so many.
I have like 4 pages of notes.
Look at this. Like, I handwrote all these. We'll go through them quickly. I like to handwrite stuff. Okay, I like the hard copies.
So is this going to be a two-parter? I don't know.
We'll go fast. Yeah, okay. So ready? First point. No, just kidding. So I just did the first 30 minutes. You did the next 30 minutes.
I know. I couldn't even listen to the whole thing. It made me so nauseous. So we split it up.
I didn't actually do the last 30 minutes on my stuff. That's okay. There's enough going on. I did the first 30 though.
I think it was all about his parasitic
tropical
diseases.
Stuff. Yeah, perfect.
Yeah, so anyway.
So at the beginning, Joe Rogan asked him, what do you think is the increase in the prevalence of autism? And he says that it's diagnosing differently.
Well, let me add. So he touched more on that later in the episode, the part I went over, he says, like you just said, we're diagnosing more, but he says, we've broadened the diagnostic spectrum. So we're bringing more people into the diagnostic category. He says, is there a true actual increase? That one I'm not sure about. And I quote him. He says, I'm not sure about it. He's essentially denying there's an actual increase. So he's basically a denier of an autism epidemic. But he admits that autism is linked to at least 6 environmental chemicals. Hmm. He says it's not all genetic. He admits there's a link. And he talks about this in his book. But he goes on to say, this is kind of what I totally disagree with. He says, the anti-vaccine side is hurting autism because they are taking away from what we really need to do for these kids. Give them services to help them succeed instead of distracting everyone with vaccines and autism debate. So, of course, I agree we want to get them services to help them succeed. But, yeah, he's essentially, any parent who believes their child did immediately regress into autism right after vaccines, Peter Hotez is basically saying, by you guys believing that and publicizing that, you are hurting autism. So he's definitely not on your side, even though he's a fellow parent of a child with autism.
But instead of focusing on figuring out what's causing it, he's saying we just need to work on getting them their services.
Yes, getting them their services.
No,
yes,
we don't. Exactly. We need to figure out how to stop it from happening.
Yes.
We don't need, don't try to say that this vaccine autism debate is a waste of time and it's just, derailing where our focus should be. I'd rather focus on that than just focusing on the services. Like, people are trying to make this as if this is just the new normal. And, he says something about, he talks about the neurodiversity movement, talks about all of the self-diagnosed people who claim, they diagnose themselves as autistic and they don't want to label it as a condition. They don't want to see it as a disease. It's not abnormal. And then he says his daughter it's not the autism that hampers her. He said it's the profound intellectual disability. So he thinks her lower IQ and everything has nothing to do with autism. He thinks that's just, so it's not, the autism isn't the problem. It's the problem that she's not able to function like, a quote unquote neurotypical child. But of course, the fact that she's not able to function like a neurotypical child is because she's autistic. So I don't know why he's separating as if those two don't go together, but I thought that was a weird thing for him to say.
Yeah, and then he also says vaccines don't cause autism. And then Joe chimes in, which I kind of liked. He says, Joe says, I don't understand that. I'm just saying it because you are saying it. Vaccines don't cause autism. Those of us who are scientifically illiterate are discussing it. Basically, Joe's saying, like, I wouldn't even know because I'm not a scientist. But I want to discuss it. I want to talk about it. But I'm just repeating what you're saying because you're the scientist. I don't actually know.
Well, that's kind of sounds a lot like what doctors do with the information that they're given too. Yeah. They just repeat it, right?
Yeah.
But he also says that what he says is the 1 million kids in the epidemiological studies, quote, completely rules out the possibility, quote, that vaccines are connected to autism. Any vaccine. He says, completely rules out the possibility.
Wow.
How could you ever make a statement like that?
I know,
ever?
Especially when scientists, there's no science that has completely ruled out the possibility.
And this is absolutely why he says that. He says because there are these new studies that talk about genes linked to autism, and he says that there is a particular MRI that can be done at 6 months of age that will predict with 90% certainty who will develop autism, a serial MRI. And he says by 6 months of age, therefore, we know it's not the vaccines. And I'm like, what did I say to you the other day? What happens by 6 months of age?
I know you've had, what, 24
doses
by 6 months of age.
You've already had the vaccines by the time you're 6 months of age. The damage can already be done. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's starting at birth, 2 months, 4 months, 6 months. Okay, if you take a scan of your brain, yeah, you might see, abnormalities in the brain because you've already gotten them. That doesn't prove. He's trying to make it seem as if the one vaccine you might get between 15 and 18 months didn't cause it because it was already there. Right. He goes back to the MMR connection with it, as if that's the only vaccine, which we know from J.B. Hanley's book and what we already know is, that's the only vaccine that's ever been studied as it relates to autism, MMR vaccine. But that's not given until between 12 and 15 months. So he's trying to deny that connection there by saying, well, if we can see this at 6 months, then we know vaccines aren't responsible. He says vaccines, right. Generalized term,
right. Exactly.
Instead of saying maybe just the MMR vaccine. But by then, you've already had this toxic load on your system, an extremely high toxic load, 24 doses by 6 months of age. That is including a flu shot, which in an outage time might have included thimerosal if they're yes. running out, right? And exactly. you're getting a 6 month and 7 month. I'm not surprised they could see something at 6 months. That doesn't prove that it's not connected to environmental toxins within vaccines. And he right. says, without a shadow of a doubt, it completely rules out the possibility. And yeah. what he's saying by that is, we are not going to look at this anymore. As if we are exactly. not going to right. study this.
Right.
It rules it out, closed, end of story, you know, back to the science is settled.
Right.
Which right. I can't, I mean, yeah. I hate that theory, obviously.
So what was next on yours, since you had the first half an hour?
He says, this is one thing, fact check, he risk of a severe adverse event, he says, is 1 in 1 million or really 1 in 10 million.
Yeah, yeah.
He goes that high with it.
Yeah, you know,
in 10 million.
He must have repeated. I feel like I heard that also at some point. I know. It's very interesting.
This guy is lost, yeah. okay? Right. 1 in 10 million. He is so far wrong. Unless he's talking, I mean, he says severe adverse event. Well, what do you qualify as severe? I mean, maybe one niche particular thing, not even anaphylactic shock, but something even more niche than that. Anaphylactic shock from this one protein and this one particular vaccine. Maybe that is 1 in 10 million. Maybe it is. But adverse events and even severe adverse events are not 1 in 10 million. Peter Hotez, stop lying to people. Because here he is on the podcast with the 4 million listeners that Joe Rogan has, telling them it's essentially non-existent.
Yeah, so where he comes up with the 1 in 10 million to 1 in a million, he basically says between 2008 and 2015, so that's about 7 or 8 years, there were 2,000 payments made in vaccine court, like payments made to 2,000 victims. And he says that was out of 2.5 billion doses. And he says 80% of those 2,000 victims, they didn't really feel like it was related to vaccines, but they just settled. And that, he said, the court just settles them.
Yeah, because, you know, they just give out right. millions of dollars for no
right,
reason.
But he did say about the other 20%, they actually did think vaccines were related to actually causing a true injury. So there he admits that vaccines do cause injury. But he says out of the 2.5 billion doses, if you look at what was paid out in vaccine court, it comes out to somewhere between 1 in 1 million and 1 in 10 million.
Indicative of right. what's actually happening.
But he's though. Not including the whole data set. He's just including vaccine court. The true data set right. would be VAERS, which is the Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System. So already as a scientist, he should be using the complete data set. He's only using a small fraction of the data set of vaccine injuries, which I don't understand why scientists would ignore a huge body of data when they're trying to make these kinds of assessments.
I do. So Joe Rogan asked him, why do they give so many vaccines? Why do they give so many? And he's like, oh, you know, basically, really, it's not that many. You can get one vaccine now that has DPT, polio, HIB, and hepatitis B all in one. Okay, so, and he's saying, you know, as in, you only have to get one vaccine.
Right, it's only one vaccine, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Except we know it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 doses in one. His quote, all sorts of studies saying it's safe to combine them. There are all sorts of studies that say this is totally
by
safe.
By the company that makes the vaccine. And gets the FDA to approve their vaccine, and we know that, you know, that the companies can, you know, work, you know, financially with the FDA to help get their products passed, and that's what he's talking about. That's the safety research he's talking about.
And then he said, people think the immune system is bombarded. He said the immune system of these children are not bombarded. They have hundreds of antigens, you know, they're in contact with every day. And you hear this argument a lot. And like right. Dr. Paul Thomas just recently said in a video, it's not about the antigens. It's about the other crap that's being injected inside with the antigens.
Right.
So yes, you might be touching things all day long if you're an infant or a child, the things you're in contact with your body recognizes. And those things are coming in contact with you through normal
right.
pathways.
Right, through the natural immune system.
Which is through the nose, yeah. through the mouth, this through the going through the stomach.
Right, it's presented to your immune system in the proper way, the way it was designed.
Right.
right.
And so this idea that Paul Offit saying, yeah. what, you could have 10,000 vaccines, that baby could have 10,000 vaccines and be no problem.
Right.
They're not talking about the other stuff in the vaccines and the amount that 10,000 of those
right.
or hundreds of those
No, but even in injecting the vaccine germs,
it's different.
You're
right.
completely artificially presenting these
yes.
to your immune system. You're bypassing the natural layers and immediately presenting them to the internal layers of your immune system that was not designed
exactly.
to see. Like what happens when you get impaled with something dirty? And it goes deep into your body, those germs bypass your natural immune system. They cause a deep tissue infection and you die from infection because your immune system is not designed to get germs directed immediately inside your body. It's designed to go through the layer by layer presented naturally. And so vaccines artificially present these to your internal immune system. So there's no way you can compare
the
millions of germs mm-hmm. you get every day to injected germs. And you know, Dr. Hotez should know that.
Well, he should because he's supposed to be an expert
yeah.
in all things medical.
Yeah.
So then he goes on to something that we talked about. The anti-vaccine lobby owns the internet.
Mm-hmm.
He calls them phony baloney. 500 websites we have and all this anti-vax misinformation. He mentions Google, Yahoo, Facebook, and Amazon. He talks about all these political action committees we have that are giving false information to legislators. And then he does what he always does in these interviews is he plays the victim. We don't have a robust system of pro-vaccine advocacy to counter it, he says.
Yeah.
We don't have it. And he said, this guy has memorized this because I'm telling you in that one of the early episodes, we read this aloud. He said the same thing in another article where he goes, so the defense of vaccine falls in the hands of a few academics. Quote,
yes.
He said the same thing months ago in an article. This guy's memorizing his talking points, you guys. Like, this is not just how he feels and what he's come across. We're talking about full-on planned statements. And so he says, it just falls in the hands of a few academics like me. Quote, what chance do I stand against this major media empire? I don't know. You're getting on Joe Rogan. You're getting in the NPR article and the CNN article, and everybody's covering your quotes. I don't know, Peter. What chance do you stand when you're getting access to millions of listeners every time you have something to say? You wrote a book that's getting all these. I mean, I don't know. How are you at a better advantage than the rest of us who, like, you know, are being completely censored? Not sure about that.
Yeah, and Joe actually calls him out on it later. Joe says, Dr. Hotez, what is this anti-vaccine lobby? Is this an organized thing? And then Dr. Hotez doesn't really answer. But yeah, I love to see how Joe, sometimes he asks very pro-vaccine questions, but sometimes he asks very, very questions that let you know he is at least questioned.
He's at least knowledgeable to what other people might say.
Right, and he hasn't drunk the Kool-Aid completely, and he knows there's no big anti-vaccine lobby.
Well, he says, what would be their motivation?
Right, right.
He goes, what are their motivation? And you know what Peter says? He says, I don't know what their, there's another agenda. And he said, there are millions of dollars, he said. Wouldn't I love to see some of that?
Yeah.
Millions of dollars to put into these phony documentaries and phony books. So it's money, right? He said he won't give a name of an example of one of these things because Joe asked him, what's an example of a phony documentary? He won't give a name because he said they're so litigious, I don't have the means to defend myself against that lawsuit.
Huh.
Like, what a joke. But you're a vaccine scientist. I'm sure you're getting paid for your work, dude.
Yeah.
Really, you can't afford against the some lawsuit that's going to come from some mom, some parent over here or some, like he swears.
Yeah. Well, Joe asks more about the anti-vaccine lobby, and he asks about RFK, Robert mm-hmm. F. Kennedy, about, you know, being one of the big players in this anti-vaccine lobby. And Joe asks, well, what is RFK getting wrong?
Right,
what is he saying wrong?
He said everything.
Peter Hotez says, yeah, just about everything. It's all nonsense.
Yeah.
And Joe challenges him, well, what's his motivation? You know, why would he be spouting all this nonsense if it's nonsense? And Peter says, I don't know, but his information is highly misleading. And Joe says, why don't you debate him then? Let's put on a live debate. Yeah, let's. And you know, Peter says, I'm uncomfortable with the idea of a debate. It's like debating a Holocaust denier. And then Joe says, well, you complain there are 19 anti-vaccine books ahead of yours on Amazon. And so why don't you get some of the authors of these books to debate him? Why don't you debate RFK? Confront RFK with actual scientific information. You could put a dent in this with a real conversation. And Peter says, potentially, but RFK is an attorney. He's very bright and clever, although he's getting everything wrong, right? He's very bright and clever. He knows how to do arguments in court. What am I? I'm just the scientist.
And then he talks about vaccine hesitant parents. He says most parents are not set in their beliefs. He said 10 to 15% are wholly invested in the anti-vaccine side or the questioning vaccines or government, pharma, blah, blah, blah. And he said the majority of parents are essentially able to be swayed. And meaning if you just talk to them, they'll go ahead and do it anyway. This is which is what he said. And so he talks about how parents today are being inundated with all this fake vaccine information, social media stuff.
Yeah.
What needs to be done, Joe asks. He says, the media empire needs to be dismantled. Okay? And he goes, but then there'd be some First Amendment issues surrounding that. That's what he said.
Yeah.
And then he goes, so Joe talks about the debate again. He says, but that would be giving false legitimacy. And he says, but this is why I think it's so funny. My quote that it's like debating if smoking causes cancer. So later in the episode, he apparently says it's like debating. He's using like weird analogies twice about the same debate, like as if this was totally planned and he got it wrong. He was supposed to repeat the same one, but he said two different ones. I thought it was so funny he brought up smoking causing cancer because tobacco science is like exactly what's happening with this type of vaccine manufacturer science.
Well, let me tell you, he touches more on the First Amendment later as well. He talks about how Amazon is putting out all these phony books and phony documentaries. So Peter Ottes recommends that Facebook and Amazon hire a chief scientific officer to go through all these books and films with a fine-tooth comb and put some stops on the dissemination of information because it's harming children. But I have no idea why Peter Ottes actually brings up the First Amendment and says there are First Amendment issues, and then he actually goes on to say we need to dismantle the First Amendment.
Well, Joe says, but Amazon's a distributor. It's not really their job to review everything. Right. And he's like, well, maybe it should be because it's harming children with these big measles outbreaks. Mm-hmm. So see, everything is building on the same thing that they've laid as the foundation for why all these things need to change right now.
Right.
And I thought it was weird. I always think it's weird when he forecasts an outbreak and he goes, Texas is very vulnerable to a measles outbreak, right? And now all of a sudden in the news this last week is a couple more cases of measles in Texas, and all of a sudden new legislation this week in Texas popping up now. And I think all this timing is so strange. The irony is the children that are involved in the Texas outbreak, the first six cases, 5 out of 6 of them were vaccinated.
Oh, okay.
And the last two cases are adults.
Yeah.
You know, nobody's going to talk about it. They won't give the information of the particular ones, but yet they're going to use that again. Yeah. Did you read the part where he talks about, or listen to the part where he says so there's no benefit to getting measles?
Yeah. Yeah. And Dr. Hotez says no.
It does not build your immune system.
Right. Right. Saying. And there are a number of research articles that directly counteract that statement that show there are benefits to getting measles. And what I've found routinely is that Dr. Ottes never seems to ever give like any sort of qualified answers. It's very black and white. Uh-huh. It's absolutely this way and only this way. There's no...
Or it's vague.
Yeah, because I mean, scientifically, the correct way to answer Joe's question, is there any benefit to a child getting measles? The scientific way would be, yeah, this study showed they have fewer, you know, chronic problems when they get older. This study showed they have fewer allergies. This study showed they have fewer autoimmune diseases. You know, maybe as a whole, we don't know for sure. As a scientific community, no one's ever proven that measles does all this, but there's some good literature that shows it might be true. But yeah, Joe, we don't want kids to die from measles. So yeah, we don't want anyone to catch measles, but it doesn't qualify it at all. He just says it's all, he calls it flim-flam. Sometime. Did you hear the word flim-flam?
No, but I heard phony baloney about five times.
Did you?
Yeah, he's just phony baloney.
Okay, so he calls all this anti-vaccine rhetoric, he calls it flim-flam. Does that kind of age him?
He likes little rhymey statements.
Yeah.
Phony baloney, flim-flam.
It's interesting. I mean, as a scientist, I find he's often not making scientific answers. He's making answers that meet an agenda.
Well, yeah, but it's not even factually correct. You know what I thought was funny is when Joe Rogan says, first of all, Peter says measles is now coming back.
Right.
It's coming back, and it's because of these fringe, that what used to be a fringe group, the anti-vaccine media empire was a fringe group. Now it's a public health crisis, allowing these deadly diseases to come back. And so Joe Rogan says, you mean like measles and like polio?
Yeah.
And he says polio, and he goes, because polio is making a resurgence, right? And like you could see Peter Hotez like, backpedal, because the only cases of polio that you see are from the vaccine.
Right, I know. So Dr. Hotez actually corrects Joe and says polio is only isolated to three countries.
Right, but he's not even still saying that the polio that they're seeing in those countries has to do with the vaccine. Yeah, that there are cases of
partly from the vaccine, partly wild polio.
Isn't it true from what I was reading that the cases that are getting it from the vaccine are able to spread it as a virus to other people? Yeah. So the other people could still be getting other cases from the vaccine, not directly, but indirectly. But I just thought it was funny that he backpedaled and all of a sudden he was like, went right back to measles. He's like, but that measles, you know, that measles is just so, because he knew you can't use the polio argument as it relates to anti-vaxxers. And so he went right back to measles. Measles is their moneymaker right now.
Yeah.
You just mentioned measles. It's everywhere. It's in every article all the time. Right. Measles, measles, measles. And so he made sure he drove back to that's the end of what I have on my notes. So
what I found interesting was Dr. Hotez says, I'm no big defender of the pharmaceutical companies. He's accused of taking money from pharma. He says, I don't take a penny from them. Mm-hmm. I get paid by the university, Baylor, and through grants from non-profit foundations like the NIH. And so I have kind of it's very possible that he's not directly getting any actual money directly from pharma. But we know nonprofits, that like medical nonprofits, do get a lot of grant money from pharma. Pharma can donate to the CDC nonprofits. Pharma can donate to other nonprofits. And I don't know if any of the nonprofits that fund Peter Hotez's university projects, I don't know if they come from pharma, but some of their money does. But here's the thing with medical universities, and I'm sure Baylor's no different. Medical universities survive mostly on donations. When I went to medical school in 1991 through 95, I was told by the medical school office that only 2% of the medical school budget came from medical school tuition. Mm. 98% of the money they did to run the hospital and run the medical school came from donations through private funding, private sources, and donations. So if Baylor University is no different, Baylor University must be accepting donations from pharmaceutical nonprofit foundations, I would imagine, because pharmaceutical companies, they often donate money to all the big medical centers all over the country to help fund research. And so basically, you know, Dr. Hotez's infectious disease department at Baylor University, they do lots of research. And if some of their funding comes from pharmaceutical companies, then he is indirectly possibly, you know, being influenced by that money. I don't know if he personally is, but there could be an indirect influence and a conflict of interest. And then, again, he says he has no influence, no direct funding from pharma. But later on, near the end, he talks about the vaccine he's trying to develop for a parasitic disease that only affects poor people. And so no pharma companies have been willing to fund it yet. But he says he keeps meeting with pharmaceutical companies, trying to get them to fund further research into his vaccine program so he can develop this vaccine. So it's going to really help underprivileged children in poor countries, help them prevent this parasitic disease. And that could be a great, that could be a great endeavor. I mean, maybe that could really be useful to those people. But he's essentially saying he's trying to get pharma to fund his research. Yet he says he has no conflict of interest, no agenda. I mean, I don't see how he can say that. He's not gonna, you know, say anything bad about pharma while he's trying to get pharma to fund his whole life and his research. So it's a little bit, it's a little bit maybe disingenuous there. But yeah, I mean, maybe he's true. He's not getting direct actual cash from pharma.
I feel like a lot of times it's always a semantics issue, right? Like they can say vaccines don't cause autism, but maybe the vaccines trigger a condition with the toxins that are in the vaccine. So therefore it created the conditions to create autism. So they're going based on the semantics of words to say, we're not really lying because we're saying something a certain way. So maybe he doesn't get money, like a check directly to him in his bank account. And so he can say, I'm not taking any money from pharma. But like you're saying, it can come around all these different sources.
So Joseph says, Dr. Hotez, parents are scared. You got this tiny little baby. The doctor says we have this round of vaccines, and the parents are terrified the baby's going to get compromised. And Dr. Hotez answers by, you know, these diseases are back now. The urgency to vaccinate is now more than ever.
Yeah.
And again, as a doctor, I don't see how it's more urgent now than ever because we don't have any more disease now, especially because the whooping cough vaccine won't prevent whooping cough. He says, you know, parents with young babies are terrified in Vancouver, where there's how many cases now? There were 17 cases back then.
17 at the time we did, yeah.
Dr. Hotez says, parents are terrified. You can't go to Walmart. The personal liberties of these parents who now can't go out is being taken away.
But now, even if their child was vaccinated and is a primary non-responder and has that false sense of security where they can go to Walmart, but they might be completely capable of being exposed to something even if they were vaccinated.
Yeah.
He makes it sound like it's just such a simple thing.
I know.
I can't stand that argument.
But he stands up for personal liberties. Why does the parent of a 6-month-old baby who's too young to get a measles vaccine, why does that parent have more liberty than a parent who chooses not to give their child the measles vaccine?
What was like that article?
Well, it's a very dangerous precedent to say, you know, one class of person has more liberties than another class. That's discrimination. That's segregation. That gets very ugly in
a society. But that was that article about how that immunocompromised child wanted to be able to go to high school and they couldn't. And isn't that so sad that their freedoms were taken away? You're thinking, what about the kid who's being cut out of school because they're vaccine injured and they can't continue with the schedule and maybe there aren't doctors willing to write medical exemptions for them? They don't get to go to school, but nobody's writing articles about how sad it is for them.
Yeah.
They're only writing the one about the immunocompromised child.
Yeah, everybody has rights to be equal citizens, as I would say. So then Joe and Peter talk about flu shot. Very interesting. And they talk about the flu epidemic, you know,
doesn't Joe say he avoids the flu shot?
He does. So, first of all, Joe asks, what about when they get the flu strain wrong in the vaccine and it doesn't protect you from what's going around? Dr. Hotez says it will protect you. There's cross protection that might minimize your symptoms, even if they got the strain wrong. And I don't think that's actually right. There's some studies that show that, but that's kind of the excuse they use. Yeah, we got it wrong this year, but there's cross protection. So
didn't he also say you're lucky to be alive if that you didn't get it, Joe? Like,
I think so. So Joe says, I don't get a flu shot. Peter says, that's crazy. You should, Joe. When I get the flu, it's mild. And Peter says, you get lucky, my friend. And Joe says, is it luck or is it good health? So like we talk about, and Peter says it's both. And Peter asks, Joe, why not get a flu shot? What are you risking by getting a flu shot vaccine? What are you risking? Peter says, I get my flu shot from the pharmacy. It's as if Dr. Hotez doesn't acknowledge the known relationship between Guillain-Barré paralysis and the flu vaccine, because that's what you're risking. And as a scientist, if he's going to talk about vaccines, he should say what the risk is. He's acting as if there is no risk,
right?
When there actually is definitely known risks from getting a flu vaccine. And Joe says, Joe asks him, I love this, Dr. Ortez, do you take care of your immune system in other ways, like through diet and taking probiotics? Dr. Ortez says, no, I'm a junk foodaholic.
Yeah. See,
did you hear that?
I didn't, but somebody had told me
Joe
about
says,
that.
That's terrible. That seems ridiculous for someone who works with health.
Yeah, who's a medical expert.
I know. I don't have to tell you, but there's a large body of data that connects poor diet to a host of diseases. That seems like a crazy decision for someone in your line of work.
Good for him.
And Peter says, I'm not going to argue with you, Joe, but you still need your vaccines.
Oh, God.
And Joe says, I eat well every day and I exercise every day. You have to do it. You have to stay healthy. You can't be pushing only chemicals in injectable form to facilitate health.
I agree. 100%.
Dr. Hortez, they're not chemicals, Joe. They're vaccines.
They're literally an injectable solution full of chemicals.
Right, like, right. And then Joe says, well, what's in them? And Dr. Hortez says, antigens and saline.
Oh, that's it. Yeah. Oh, wow. Look at the lying, straight up lying, he's saying. There's nothing else in
that's
there,
it's a
right?
lie of omission. So that's less of a lie, yeah, I guess.
Except that he put a period at the end of the sentence when there was room for other ingredients that he's not going to listen. Yeah. I didn't see that part.
Yeah, it's very... very interesting. So, this is very interesting. This is interesting. I love this part. This might be the last interesting part. Joe mentions a nurse who was exposed to Ebola in Africa, and she came back here to the U.S. Mm-hmm. and they quarantined her in a cabin in an airport. And Joe asks, she wasn't sick. She didn't have Ebola, but they quarantined her. And they were talking about, and so Peter Hotez says, that was so cruel. That was ignorance of how Ebola is transmitted.
Wait, I thought there was a whole big freak out when there was that one case in Texas or something. Remember, like,
you're right,
years
there
back?
Was. But Dr. Hotez's point is, you pass Ebola through close contact with bodily fluids. So it's not like you have to be quarantined in a cabin at an airport. You could probably, safely go home and stay quarantined in your home. Dr. Hortez is saying there's ignorance about how it's transmitted. Yet they don't mention, how the whooping cough vaccine doesn't prevent transmission. Diphtheria vaccine doesn't. The polio vaccine doesn't. The flu vaccine doesn't. There's so many other things that make it unreasonable and unethical and unnecessary to quarantine kids at home if they're not vaccinated, to not allow them into school. For some reason, that's not cruel to kick millions of children out of school for not vaccinating, but it was cruel to quarantine one child, one nurse, out of ignorance.
Well, which, by the way, I had somebody contact me in New York because their child was taken out of school for 3 months over this whole thing.
Yeah.
And they actually went to court to sue. There were 25 families, and because they were just in the same county and they were being quarantined. So not even somewhere in the same local vicinity. And it was 3 months away from school, and they went through the trial and they did not win. But what they did win was the quarantine period went from 42 days to 21 days, which was, and it went from county to zip code.
Okay. All right.
And I want to talk more about that another time, but you're right. Those 3 months.
Yeah. So I wonder if Peter Hotez would consider it cruel and ignorance to quarantine kids in an entire county, when there's what,
not
a
if they're not complying.
Right. Right. So I don't know if there's anything interesting. I mean, the rest of the
podcast
discussion was just kind of what you'd expect.
Well, so you mentioned,
well, Dr. Hotez doesn't believe in the hygiene hypothesis. He feels like it's not a very airtight hypothesis. Let's see, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. I guess that's about it.
Well, so you mentioned the book that he's written, and I went on Amazon and actually looked at, the reviews for his book, because they were mixed.
Okay.
They were very mixed reviews. And I want to read some of the criticisms of his book from people who were even supporters of him. And so one person says, This was neither well written nor well edited, and it was less persuasive than it should have been. It says, I looked forward to reading this, hoping it would provide students with a readable, comprehensible, and compelling account of the doubtful science and politics behind the anti-vaccine movement. The author's credentials as an MD, PhD, and the background in the study and development of vaccines, and his personal experience would be great, right? He says, well, I thought. To say I was disappointed understates my reaction to it. The author is not a strong writer or someone who is a good explainer, and the book received ineffective editing. One of the big problems with the book is that he is heavily name-dropped and talks so much about the history of the development of vaccines. He said at least half of the book simply does not add anything. It doesn't provide the reader with a solid history, and it doesn't illuminate the vaccine autism dispute. He said, and this is what I thought was interesting too. It says, another problem with the book is it's extremely repetitive. Okay. Quote, saying things over and over does not persuade a critical thinker of the truth of what is being said over and over.
It doesn't? Doesn't make it more true?
And yet we hear in public relations all the time, a lie said enough times becomes the truth.
Right.
And we know with the media bullet points, the catchphrases, they literally just say it over and over and over and over again until people just accept this as truth. And what I'm noticing about the podcast that Peter Hotez is in, he's saying things in the first half that he says in the second half because he's got his phrases that he wants to make sure and say enough times. And so this person's actually a total supporter of him, and they were disappointed that this does not turn out to say anything that's helpful. And so another review says, I was hoping this book would provide an informative and data-driven perspective about the why and the how vaccines do not cause autism. Huh. It seemed like much of the book was about how important vaccines are. And he said, the issue for some people, while vaccines may be important, is what evidence is there to demonstrate there is no correlation between vaccines and autism? Rather than reading about that, he said, rather than reading about how wonderful vaccines are for most of the book, I would have liked to have read about specific research that debunks the link between vaccines and autism. So, and he talks a lot about anti-vaxxers. But doesn't consistently state what the lies they tell are and how he can prove they are lies. He says anti-vaxxers tell half-truths and outright lies, but he does not state what those lies are, and he does not prove how they're lies, which I thought was an interesting review. And then you've got somebody who, this person says, I'm an autism parent and I fully disagree with this doctor. Here's why. I disagree with this person because vaccine is a drug just like anything else. It has upside, downside, adverse reactions, and side effects. Not every drug is suitable for every patient. Not every drug works the same way. Same with vaccines. Too much of a good thing is always bad. And that's why we're seeing 1 in 40 American children with autism. So this is a parent with autism that disagreed with that. There was another one where it says that Peter Hotez implies all vaccinations, but mentions only some, are needed to prevent epidemics of certain disease. If one would consider the above-mentioned vaccines used by the military, it would become clear very quickly that profits do dictate development and administration of certain vaccines. Should we question vaccines? Yes. Should some vaccines be administered to protect everybody? Yes. He says, but he does not convince me of the objectivity because of his daughter's condition. He said, no, this book was not, if this book had only been about autism and vaccines, which it clearly was not, he might have made his point better. These are all people who actually were going into this, believing this, and they purchased this book because they agree with that. But, you know, so his book's called, you know, Vaccines Did Not Cause Rachel's Autism. There are a few, you know, there are reviews that say, oh, this is so great. Vaccinations are great. Anti-vaxxers are dangerous. One review talks about how he states the danger of the anti-vaccine message, which this book is already published. So that means to say he's laying that groundwork already a couple years before it became the mm-hmm. new social media phenomenon of March 2019, where it's all about the dangers of the misinformation. Somebody even reviewed about that, so I thought that was interesting. As you cannot have an issue as complicated and complex as a yeah. medical intervention like this, it will never be black and white. Right. You can never say that vaccines do not reduce the incidence of any disease. You can't say that, right? You tell me all the time. There are certain vaccines that do reduce the incidence of certain disease. Now, whether we need to do that or not is a different story. And you can never say that they always are safe and they are always effective. You cannot be on either extreme as it relates to just the facts about this. And he's such an ardent pro-vaccinationist that it's really hard to be open-minded to those conversations, I find, because he does not feel like someone who's genuinely trying to reach out and say, let's just talk about this. Right. You know, one of the things we do here is let's just talk about this. Yeah. Let's talk about how we feel. There are times that you say, well, actually, I disagree with that. There are times I tell you, I don't disagree with that. But if I sat and had a conversation with somebody who is very hardcore, I would want to have the conversation. But let's look at this stuff. It's not about being one way or the other or convincing somebody. It's like, let's put all the facts on the table and let's see what we can kind of come to at the end of this as a solution. Yeah. Where there are truths on both sides. Like, I was thinking about this the other day. People that say vaccines can reduce some disease. Vaccines cause injuries. Like, that sounds like it's two camps, but the truth is they're both truths.
Right.
They are both true. Right. One is not true and one is not false. I think that's the problem that we're having with this debate. If you want to tell me that vaccines do reduce some disease, then that means, oh no, I've got to be a super pro-vaccine person who believes in mandates. It's not true. That can be true, but you can also admit vaccines hurt people.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's why, I mean, we were talking a few episodes ago, the idea of misinformation really is in fact what we called more information. You know, that people claim the statement vaccines can cause injuries. They say that's misinformation. It's not. It's completely 100% supported by science. It's simply more information. And maybe that should be the catchphrase, you know, not misinformation, more information. But I don't know. Interesting. I have to run. Actually, I have to go soon because
I have to. You're not the only one that's got.
Some friends of mine are taking Cheryl and I out to dinner for my birthday, so I have to actually.
Speaking of birthday, you got home. A nice little message on the podcast.
Oh my gosh! Yeah.
Oh my goodness! Hello, haven't said anything about it all day. Thank you. Hey, you're welcome. I guess.
Oh my gosh! Okay.
Jeez.
Yeah. So thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that. That was a surprise.
I had to work with Matt for 2 weeks on that. Wow. I did to make sure that we got it on the episode that aired the day of your birthday. This is what I told him.
Yeah.
I said, if he wants to make a release date on a different day, come up with an excuse of why you just couldn't get it done.
That's so funny. So you guys all heard that message probably, I don't know, a few weeks ago now.
Well, it would have been on March 14th. Yeah, so you can look back at that episode.
Yeah, but that was so great to hear that. But yeah, I was totally surprised. And yeah, Melissa's right. I'm the one that sort of works with Matt to like edit the episodes or put them together, like, and say when they come out. And I was very amazed that you guys were able to.
Well, I remember your birthday because my brother's is the day after.
Okay,
so it's easy to remember for me, except I don't know why I thought yours was the 16th instead of the 14th. But anyway, Matt corrected me on that one.
Yeah.
And then and we put it on there. So it's a cute little intro message if you haven't heard it.
And it's funny, like I hadn't listened to it yet, right? And you text me, you're like, something's wrong with the episode that we just
listen
posted.
There's
something weird at the beginning. And
something's weird. Can you listen to it and let me know? And then the funny thing
I'm like, oh no.
And the funny thing is you're like already responding like, oh, that was funny just after my part. And I'm thinking, stop texting me, listen to the whole thing. Let it sink in, buddy. Because it's so nice to have supporters out there.
So
and then have kids involved, And my little daughter's on there. So thank you for helping and protecting kids like me. And she represents, it's not just her. She represents the body of children that doctors who are open-minded enough to understand that vaccine reactions do happen and want to protect them from further harm. She represents all those kids. Yeah. She represents the kids that have a voice with doctors like you.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's why it wasn't about her. It was just about her being the voice for those other children, because I'm sure there are hundreds of them that personally thank you. And then there are thousands across, you know, the nation that are with healthcare practitioners that believe and support what you're doing, and they also practice that way. Yeah. And so that's protecting and helping them too. Yeah. And it's only because you had a big birthday. That's the only reason.
Yeah. You're not going to do this every year.
Usually forget his birthday. I'll be like, oh yeah, by the way, happy birthday. But no,
it was very appreciated. It was a great surprise, and I was touched my heart. So thank you.
You're welcome. And thank you guys for listening to the Vaccine Conversation. Make sure, pause, keep those reviews coming on iTunes. We have over 450 or something, somewhere around there, ratings. Yeah. Keep them coming in. And again, we've surpassed 100,000 downloads. This is so exciting. And we appreciate you guys so much.
All right, you guys, take care.
The information in this podcast is for entertainment purposes only. It is not intended as medical advice. Always consult your healthcare professional for information on vaccines and infectious diseases.